I am speaking for no one but myself. Hey, it's me, Wilson. I enjoy politics. I enjoy talking about things. And I invite you to step out of your political tribe for just a few minutes and consider a new point of view on politics. Here's my theory. I'm going to just lay it on you real quick, and then we're going to talk about Texas. And my theory is this, that the U.S. population is moving south. That's not actually a theory. That's a fact. But my theory is that as the population moves south, you get what we have now, which is polarizations, disputes, dysfunctional government. And that's because for 100 years, the North had more or less complete control over the United States government as a whole, the federal government. And culture has been defined by Northern American culture. And as the balance of power tips south, everything's up for grabs and people get testy. And that's what I mean when I say the compass of power. The needle used to point north, now it's swinging south. And nationally speaking, the South is the conservative side of our politics. Surprise. So if you were speaking from the liberal perspective, and I am from the North, and I am of the liberal persuasion, and so from my point of view, I think, well, if I wanted to have my way, I would need to overthrow the establishment in the South to win. When I say overthrow, I don't mean like coup d'etat. I mean like you would have to get people who are right now part of the underclass in the South, the people who are on the outs and not calling the shots, they need to be able to call the shots, because there's actually more seats in Congress down there than there are in my neck of the woods. There's more money down there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If the political power is far away from me, then I need to empower the people over there that agree with me. That's where I'm coming from, right? And Democrats across the USA would love to win in Texas, the Lone Star State. It is the number two most populated state, only behind California. And they are like a little pair that people hold up, right? Conservative Texas, liberal California. There are 29.1 million people in Texas. And that has just been growing and growing and growing. They are up 15.9% since 2010, over a decade. The national growth rate was 7.4%. So they're almost exactly double the national growth rate. And they now have 38 congressional seats. Remember, the House of Representatives is representative of where the population is. And each state gets a certain number of seats out of the total based on the census. And since Texas is adding people and packing on the voters, then it gets more seats and places in the North get less seats. So they were the only state to get two seats in the last census. And both of those new congressional districts are getting to get filled in the midterm elections coming up right now. So it's obviously a big prize. You want to win in Texas if you care about having your way nationally. But Republicans in Texas are not to be trifled with. And I don't just mean like they have good numbers, that they have a very Texas brand of Republicanism. And we could get into the backstory of that. But all I'm going to say is that there is a big chunk of the what we call the Appalachian culture, right? That they're the folks that settled in the Appalachian Mountains and moved south and then out into the West. They are there, and they are known for their fighting style. And you also have elements of the Deep South in Texas. And the Deep South is known for playing for keeps when it comes to political power, right? So between those two, you in Texas was formed in the belly of the God of War, go to the Texas Capitol, take the tour. I am not making this up, that when I took the tour, a man with a snakeskin eye patch gave it to me. And he showed me mural after mural, and every one of those murals was about fighting and burning and surviving and winning, and it's a great state of Texas. They have the Texas Rangers. It's not just a basketball. It's not just a baseball team. So the Republicans don't pull their punches there, and they are ruthless when it comes to drawing the congressional districts and every other district they can. They like to gerrymand, and they are like the modern originators of this. It's been around forever and ever and ever, but they really took it to new heights back, like starting 20 years ago. And what they like to do is take areas that might vote for a Democrat and then split them amongst many Republicans is one way to do it, right? So they'll just take, here's a big cluster of Democrats. We don't want them to like be able to elect their own person, so we'll break them up six different ways, and now they're just a minority in several other districts. If that's not possible, if you have too big a group, then what they do is they put you in a super concentrated area, and then you get like one super bright blue dot in an otherwise sea of red. So you just make all those Democrats. Yes, you could win 50% of the vote in three or four districts, but we put you into one 90% district. You're welcome. That is the Texas way of politics. It is winner gets all. But National Democrats think they've got something in Beto O'Rourke. He might have the formula to win the governor's mansion and break up the one-party control in Texas. And the governor's race does kind of lend itself to getting out of, like, for example, that gerrymandering trap, right? Because you just have to win statewide. And almost no state's boundaries make any sense. I have a special exception for Hawaii. But other than that, you know, the boundaries of Texas are arbitrary. But at least here, they are well-established, well-known, and we can all agree that at least it's everybody in Texas voting for statewide position like governor. And Beto O'Rourke was in Congress. He was representing El Paso. I believe he ran against Ted Cruz and came close. And he's kind of, you know, he's made a name for himself as a contender. He can get in there. He can get close. He threatens them. He scares those Republicans. But he hasn't sealed the deal yet on a statewide basis. And he is up against Governor Greg Abbott, who is running for a third term. Now, I want to look at this race very briefly from the compass of power perspective, and I am not from Texas. I'm not from Texas, so apologies right now, Texans, that I'm going to get all sorts of things wrong and make sweeping judgments of you and your politics, and I'm sorry because you can, you know, politics are a local sport, but I'm up in my airplane looking down from 30,000 feet, and I'm pretty sure I understand the 30,000-foot view of what's happening here. So, from my point of view, what I ask myself is, how is the underclass in Texas going to seize power? How are the people who have not been running this show, who haven't been winning statewide elections, suddenly going to do that in 2022? And my take on what's going on right now is that in the view of the Northern elite, the Democrats, right, the Southern elite, as we know, they are, when we say a red state, what we mean is that the elites are basically Southern, in my point of view, but let's just agree that it's definitely Republican, and the elites in Texas are Republicans. They run the show. In the North, it's the opposite story. The elite in the North are Democrats, and the elite in the North would tell you that they should have Texas by now, right? Because demographics. See, the dominant narrative in the North, and especially amongst the liberal elite in the North, is that the power brokers in the South are a bunch of white good old boys who are using racial resentment to motivate poor rednecks into voting for them and keeping them in power. And the that same theory for decades has held that the more diversity, aka the more non-white people you have of any kind, the less power Republicans will have. So there was, for a long time, this sort of this like cocky self-assurance amongst Democrats. Well, fine, you won this time, but things keep changing. And there's eventually going to be less and less white people as a share of the vote. And if you keep, being the party of white grievance, you're going to eventually lose. And the idea was that Republicans were doomed because America will become less white and there's more and more non-European immigrants coming in. But if that was true, then Texas would be in the blue bag already because Texas is only 40% white. 40%. I want to say that again. The biggest of the red states is mostly not white. At least as we construct it. I want to twist a political phrase and say that race is downstream from culture. So the way we think of our demographics is just a reflection of the way we are culturally. So when we in the North start applying what we think we know about how race fits into politics, and then we like apply it to places like Texas or Florida, that we suddenly understand what's going on. But clearly we don't, because in Texas, that culture is a long way from the North in just about every way. There's very little overlap between the way things are done in Texas and the way they are done in the Yankee areas of the United States, the liberal bastions of, like, say, San Francisco up through Seattle, or, you know, the Eastern Seaboard, New England, Boston, New York, across the northern tier there, even into Michigan and Wisconsin. Whole different ballgame. Even if you get Republicans winning, it's a different ballgame. It's very, very not North in Texas. And therefore, that state hasn't elected a Democrat since 1990 when Ann Richardson won. And why should we believe that Beto O'Rourke has any better chance than the many, many Democrats who have tried before and failed? Well, first of all, not a lot of people believe that he's coming that close. So I did find a poll. This was out of the Dallas paper a while back, and it said that Abbott leads O'Rourke 47-38% amongst registered voters statewide. And those that said they are certain to or likely to vote gave the lead to Abbott, the Republican, by 11 percentage points, 50%-39%. We should contrast that to the various fundraising emails I get as a loyal Democrat that they, what was the last one I saw? It's a dead heat. What was this? This is great. Polling update. Poll has Beto O'Rourke and Greg Abbott in a dead heat. Beto O'Rourke, 45%. Greg Abbott, 48%. Although it's probably not a good sign that even when you've got your fundraising poll, which is guaranteed to overstate your chances, still has you down by 3 points. But they are trying to say that it's somehow close, but you don't get that sense from some of the polling that's been done. And again, this is just my perspective, Texas. I think the challenge is that O'Rourke's been trying to sell the northern elite's wares to enough Texans to win, but that's pretty tough to do. It is pretty hard to take what the Democratic establishment in the North thinks is important and their policies and take it to Texas and then win over a majority of voters. I listened into the debate between O'Rourke and Abbott. And first of all, the first topic was immigration, which is not necessarily the number one topic nationwide. So right off the bat, Texas is different. And I think it's pretty obvious why. Again, politics is place, and Texas is actually located along the border with Mexico. So given the trends in immigration over the past generation, which has primarily been from the South, immigration's a big issue. And Abbott's sort of signature move on this is called, in a very Texan way, Operation Lone Star, which is using Texas National Guard, Texas resources to assist, I guess, the federal government along the international border there. Obviously, the feds should have jurisdiction over international borders. Technically, they do. Say, I'm in Washington State. They do along the border with Canada. But the debate here, of course, is like, well, how much of this is actual go and how much of this is show? And so O'Rourke was left to say, well, that's a waste of money. You know, it's increasing unfortunate incidents between law enforcement and immigrants. We need those immigrants. They're part of our economy. They're certainly part of Texas's culture, right? But it's kind of like, well, that doesn't work. It's not like this is morally wrong and bad. I mean, there's a hint of that, but he has to take the, it's a waste of money thing. Also, Greg Abbott, Speaking of just show and no go, bust migrants out to places. Strangely enough, places like Chicago or New York or other liberal bastions above the Mason-Dixon line. What are the odds of that happening, right? And O'Rourke calls this a stunt. It's a stunt. It doesn't have any substance. But again, if this were being held in Massachusetts, it'd be like, that is a moral outrage. It is terrible and wrong and bad, and you are an evil person, Greg Abbott. But you can't really say that in Texas because there are probably enough people who think it is justifiable that you don't want to lose those voters. So you end up saying, well, this is showboating, which is not acceptable in Texas, as far as I can tell. I mean, there seems like there is a lot of showboating, but I feel like the general feeling is that we should not be showboating, or at least not be caught showboating. And then, of course, they went to abortion. Abbott signed some pretty strict abortion limitations, as, again, you might expect. And here, I feel like Abbott was playing on the defense because he tried to accuse O'Rourke of being willing to, like, you know, like, well, he's supporting abortions, like, post-birth, which is a horrible concept. And O'Rourke, of course, had to be like, no one in Texas is in favor of whatever crazy thing you're talking about right now. But that's, you know, that's how you defend yourself, I guess, there. So in that kind of like extreme defense made me feel like maybe Abbott was worried about that issue. But then they quickly switched to defunding the police. And I think we can all agree that defund the police, which may or may not have been like a very widespread movement, and we can all debate that, but there was definitely a moment when lots of liberal cities were reconsidering how they fund their police departments, and it didn't go so well in the North, and it sure as heck didn't come out of the South, and you actually ended up with Beto O'Rourke, the Democratic hope, saying that, well, I actually raised police salaries while I was in El Paso. So he's actually saying, I'm not, you know, not only like, that's not really the best approach and we can find other ways. He's saying, no, no, I did the opposite. More money for police. And then we switched to Uvalde, which was a horrific school shooting, which you are probably familiar with. And they talk about, should we raise the age to buy an AR-15? And here again, I felt like maybe Abbott was being a little defensive, because that's a topic on which even some hardcore folks, I think, are changing their minds when you see these horrible shootings. And obviously, Texas, as we have discussed, has a long history with the gears of war, and they are not about to back off the Second Amendment. But I do think that there was some shuffling of feet and some dancing done by Abbott, metaphorically speaking, when we talk about raising the age to buy AR-15. And that led into crime rates. Well, crime rates are going up. And this is an odd one in that, like, O'Rourke's able to, like, blame that on Abbott, which is, again, the opposite of what you've seen in a lot of other places where you have Democrats on their heels because they've been in charge in the North and crime rates are going up and they're saying, no, they're not. Or if they are, there's other reasons. And again, it's just an inverse mirror. I think I've made my point here. The list of issues, like abortion, gun violence, busing migrants, those are issues a Democrat could easily win on in the North, but they aren't open to O'Rourke the way they would be in Minnesota. The Texas take on these issues are immigration, public safety, and Joe Biden, who, by the way, is the proper response for any Republican candidate in the South. Doesn't matter what the question is, you say, Joe Biden did it. And he and Abbott did that. You can watch any debate in some of these hotly contested Southern races, and it's like, well, you love Joe Biden and I don't, therefore I win. But those are, you know, whether it's immigration or public safety or, you know, what Joe Biden's stance is, those are all losers for O'Rourke in Texas. And if you go over the polls, and it starts to look like pretty steep odds. The only place that Beto is close and winning is in the part of Texas that includes Austin. And Austin's a big city. But I think, you know, what Austin's reputation is it's the anti-Texas Texas crowd. Right? It's the not like the rest of Texas place. So if you're only winning in the place that's already flying the rebel flag, so to speak, that's not good enough. You got to win in places where they are out and proud Texans. So I'll just wrap up by saying, I don't know that you can find the future of liberalism That is, the kind of liberalism that could carry the South and therefore create a national majority in the Texas race for governor in 2022. It just seems like the mix of issues, the mix of positions they have is not sufficiently compelling to enough people to woo them over from liking the way things are. And you have to do that. You have to do that to win when you're the underdog. And clearly the Democrats are the underdogs. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. I, again, don't think the answer is to wait for the demographics to keep changing, because they have changed. It's actually about staking out some kind of cultural position that's going to help you carry the day. And if you want to see what the future of liberalism might look like, in my opinion, you need to look at the Georgia race. And yes, I'm going to do a podcast on that, because Georgia is deep, deep South, but they, Democrats have won there narrowly, but they've won and they're up again, and they're running on a kind of liberalism that I think is distinct from Northern liberalism. Let's leave it at that. Check out that show. You want to talk about what the future of conservatism looks like? I don't think it's in Texas necessarily. Abbott certainly has made a mark for himself, but all the heat, if we can use that, is about it's about Ron DeSantis and the governor of Florida, and he's hopefully, to the Republican mindset, cruising to this amazing victory in the governor's race there, and then maybe he's the 2024 nominee for president. So I think I'm doing a show on that, and you can check that out too. Check out the Florida show to talk about, like, why is conservatism pulling ahead there, and what does that mean for our chances in upsetting the apple cart in Florida. Thanks for listening. It's been awesome. You can always go to the website, compassofpower.com. I love it. Have a good time.